Well, good morning, church. So hold up your paper Bible if you brought one. How many of you brought paper Bibles? Many of you brought paper Bibles. Excellent. So if you have one, turn to the book of John. It's in the New Testament. You might have to look it up in the table of contents, but it's on the right side of your Bible. Two scriptures we're looking at today. One is John 10, and two is Hebrews chapter 12. So you might actually just put a finger in both those because we'll be in both those chapters here in a few minutes. If you weren't with us last week, as Scott mentioned, we're in this brand new series and it's about your relationship with your phone. And we're not anti-phone here, we're not anti-technology, but your relationship with God is very much hinged on your relationship with your devices. And so we're just putting this front and center for just a few weeks here just to see what our relationships with other people would look like and what our relationship with God would look like if we had a little healthier relationship with our device. Now, before I get to the message I want to bring today, a few things to tell you about. One, I read a book about 3 years ago by James Brian Smith called You Are What You Love, one of the best books I've read in the last 4 or 5 years. And my big takeaway from his book is that the thing that shapes us more than anything else we've kind of overlooked. It's not your education, it's not your background, it's not your experience, it's not your past, it's not your personality. The thing that shapes you the most, that we often overlook, is actually your habits. So what you do every day shapes you more than anything else. So for example, for those of you that drive, think about this. You've probably had that experience where you're driving in your car and you're going somewhere familiar, like to home or to work, and all of a sudden you just arrive, like you have no memory of actually driving there, and all of a sudden you're just in the driveway, you're in the parking slot. Well, what happened there? You're so familiar with driving that you no longer even have to think about it. You don't think about when to push the brakes and when to push the gas and if the blinker should go up or the blinker should go down. It's just so part of who you are because of habit that now you don't even have to think about it. Well, the same is true with you and your spiritual life. Your spiritual habits actually shape you more than anything else. And so I say all this to say, we're offering something that we've never offered before in about 2 months. In the month of March, we are going to offer a spiritual disciplines retreat. And it's called Refuge. And what it is we're getting away for a weekend. It's March 8th, 9th, and 10th. And we're going to go away to Sequoia State Park up in northeast Oklahoma. And it's going to be 2 days specifically about spiritual disciplines. So a spiritual discipline is a spiritual habit. It's a habit that you have, and over time, when you practice this spiritual habit, it has a profound relationship or a profound effect on your relationship with Christ. So we're going to go to this retreat this weekend. Chris Altrak is both a preacher and an author. He wrote the book 10-Minute Transformation, which is a great book about spiritual formation. He'll be there. $125 per person, which includes 2 nights lodging plus meals. So if you are familiar with spiritual disciplines and you practice them, then this will just be like a refresher for you. But for others of you, this is like what you've been waiting for. Like you've really been trying to get off high center when it comes to building really healthy habits when it comes to your spiritual life. This weekend is something that could really help you out. So I don't have one with me. Oh, I do have one with me. These are at all the exits. So as you leave, grab a form, and it'll help you with a lot more details. And to register, Debbie Carter. Email Debbie Carter. Swing by the Summit, which is our building on the north. Talk to Debbie Carter to reserve your spot because the space actually is limited. One more thing on that. If you would like to help out with scholarships for other people so that other people can go and money's not a factor, you're welcome to talk to Andy Lashley about that. One more thing to tell you. One of our newest members is Kevin Hervey, and he plays for the Oklahoma City Blue, which is the Thunder's G League affiliate. So Kevin Hervey was the Thunder's first draft pick in the summer of 2018, but most of the fall he was dealing with a knee injury. 2 or 3 weeks ago, he actually came forward in second service and asked for prayers from our church family as he gets out of his injury and starts playing again. So he's been back playing for a few weeks, and there's a home game this coming Friday night, January 18th, and we would love to get as many people from our church family out to the Oklahoma City Blue game to support Kevin Hervey. Mac Maddox works in group sales with Thunder Office, and he goes to this church family, and so he's arranged for there to be a section that we can sit in together as a church family. In your bulletin, there's details about how to get your ticket, and I believe there was a link sent out as well, but tickets are just $10 or $11. We would love to see you out this coming Friday night for the game. After the game, we're going to get together, for those of us who are there in a room somewhere, and we're going to sing a few songs, and then we're also going to hear from Kevin Hervey himself. So this coming Friday, come out and support Kevin. So my name, Phil Brookman, is a pretty simple name, but you would be surprised at how often people mess my name up when they call me. So I get a call from a business or organization. More often than not, they'll say my name wrong. So the two most common ways that people mispronounce my name, number one is they'll say, "Is this Mr. Brockman?" And immediately I know, okay, they don't really know me because nobody says my last name Brockman. It's Brookman. But the second most common mistake that people make when they call me, and I don't know how this one happens, I think somewhere my mom and I are mixed up on a database. And so more often than you would think, someone will call me, a business organization, and I'll answer and I'll say, "Hello?" And they'll say, "Is this Gail?" And I think, okay, I know I don't have like a Morgan Freeman voice, but I don't sound like a girl, and clearly I am not Gail. Now, when this happens, when someone says, "Is this Mr. Brockman?" or when someone says, "Is this Gail?" I know immediately that this person doesn't care about me. They don't know me. I'm just some number to them, and all they really want to do is try to sell me some bogus vacation or try to get me to sign up for some credit card, because what they really want is they really want my money. Because the truth is, hidden agendas live everywhere. Hidden agendas, they're everywhere. Every time you drive in your car and you see a billboard, there's a hidden agenda. Every commercial you see when you watch TV, there's a hidden agenda. Your friends, even though your friends are amazing, they have hidden agendas. You, even though you're amazing, you have hidden agendas, and so does your phone. Your phone has quite a few hidden agendas that it's really hard to even know about. In fact, so what I want to do today is I want to help you and I think about what's on the other side of this screen. So when you get your phone out, you can't really see anything behind it, but the truth is there are thousands of engineers and there are millions of dollars that go into every single thing that you see on a screen. And those thousands of engineers and those millions of dollars, they're not neutral. They actually have a pretty drastic agenda for you and for me. So in fact, let's do a little experiment here. I'm going to just play a sound for you, and I want you to pay attention to the way you react internally. So go ahead and play that sound. Okay, so just go back and play it one more time. Did you feel anything on the inside? Okay, now play the next one. Okay, and do it again. And do it a third time. Okay, now, whether or not you know it, pretty much every person in the room had a little bit of dopamine released in your brain when you heard that sound, or when you felt, or you heard that buzz. Like, some of you are like, "Oh, was that, what was that, me?" Like, we don't even have to think about it. It actually causes a neurological response in us. And the reason why it's so interesting, think about this. The last 50 times that your phone buzzed or dinged or swooshed or did something, how many of those buzzes were actually really important? Like, just think about it. Out of 50, like how many were like, "Oh, if I hadn't have checked my phone right there, like, the world would have fallen apart." Like, how many out of 50? Like, maybe three? Like, three were actually like, "Oh, I'm really glad I answered that because I was actually needed." And what about the other 47? Well, it's like the gym memberships, the advertisements that you really don't care about, and it's the friend requests from people you don't even know who they are. 3 out of 50 is my guess as far as for most of us in the room. But here's the crazy part. That is precisely what makes us keep coming back to the phone. What scientists have discovered is the thing that makes us come back to something is not consistent rewards. It's unpredictable ones. And so if you had the same reward every time you went to your phone, if it was all amazing and wonderful every single time it buzzed, you actually wouldn't go to it as much. But because it's unpredictable, because you don't know, if it's going to be a great text message or a notification that you actually need to know about. Because you don't know, because it's unpredictable, you just keep coming back for more and more and more. In fact, this exact same philosophy is used in another area of life, slot machines. So the reason that slot machines are so addictive is not because they give you consistent rewards, it's because the rewards are unpredictable. So there's a guy I want to introduce you to named Tristan Harris. He's a former Google executive. He worked for Google for a really long time. He actually left Google because he got tired of how manipulative the technology industry was behind the scenes. And so he's one of the few people that have actually spoken out from what it's like to work at one of these companies. So here's what he says. When we pull our phone out of our pocket, we're playing a slot machine to see what notifications we got. When we swipe down our finger to scroll the Instagram feed, we're playing the slot machine to see what photo comes next. When we swipe faces left and right on dating apps, we're playing a slot machine to see if we got a match. In other words, we, as humanity, we are as addicted to our phones as gamblers are to the casino. But just like gamblers, we are often the last ones to know about it. About a year ago, a little over a year ago, 60 Minutes ran a special on something called brain hacking, which is the idea that companies are actually trying to get inside of your brain. And so I want to play you two clips. They're both about a minute long from this episode of 60 Minutes. So you can play the first one.
Have you ever wondered if all those people you see staring intently at their smartphones nearly everywhere and at all times are addicted to them? According to a former Google product manager you're about to hear from, Silicon Valley is engineering your phone, apps, and social media to get you hooked. He's one of the few tech insiders to publicly acknowledge that the companies responsible for programming your phones are working hard to get you and your family to feel the need to check in constantly. Some programmers call it brain hacking, and the tech world would probably prefer you didn't hear about it. But Tristan Harris openly questions the long-term consequences of it all, and we think it's worth putting down your phone to listen.
There's always this narrative that technology is neutral and it's up to us to choose how we use it. This is just not true.
Technology is not neutral.
It's not neutral. They want you to use it in particular ways and for long periods of time because that's how they make their money.
So did you get that? Every app, every phone is ultimately designed to make money for its creators. And the longer we as humanity stare at our screens, the more money that they make. So in a lot of ways, everything that the technology industry does, or a lot of things they do, this is another quote from Tristan Harris, it's a race to the bottom of the brainstem. So what you see on the screen right now is something that, of all the things I've researched and read about, this one was probably the most alarming to me. This is the logo for a company in California called Dopamine Labs. And what this company sells is they sell coding to apps like Instagram or Facebook, and what the coding does is it will predict when you need a reward when you're on the app to keep you looking at the app for longer. And they can design the algorithm to cater to individual users. So here's about a one-minute clip of the creator of this company, and he describes what the company does.
The programs are designed to provoke a neurological response.
You're trying to figure out how to get people coming back.
When should I make you feel a little extra awesome to get you to come back into the app longer?
The computer code he creates finds the best moments to give you one of those rewards, which have no actual value, but Brown says trigger your brain to make you want more. For example, on Instagram, he told us sometimes those likes come in a sudden rush.
They're holding some of them back for you to let you know later in a big burst, like, hey, here's the 30 likes we didn't mention from a little while ago.
So all of a sudden you get a big burst of likes.
Yeah, but why that moment? There's some algorithm somewhere that predicted, hey, for this user right now, who's experimental subject 79B3 in experiment 231, we think we can see an improvement in his behavior if you give it to him in this burst instead of that burst.
When Brown says experiments, he's talking generally about the millions of computer calculations being used every moment by his company and others to constantly tweak your online experience and make you come back for more.
You're a part of a controlled set of experiments that are happening in real time across you and millions of other people.
We're guinea pigs.
You're guinea pigs. You're guinea pigs in the box, pushing the button and sometimes getting the likes. And they're doing this to keep you in there.
Isn't that just so disturbing? Like, it's just an experiment, and we're all lab rats. And you're just experiment number 321B in some big experiment. Like, that really disturbs me. But this does explain a lot. Because what this means is that the reason that you can't even get through a stop line without looking at your phone, and the reason that every time you get on the elevator, you got to get your phone out, and the reason that you will look at someone that's right in front of you, but then look away and say, no, I need you to wait, and just look at your phone. The reason that you do all of those things is because the companies that design the phone, they do have an agenda. And here's what the agenda is. It's pretty simple. The agenda is addiction. They want your eyeballs on the screen because when they can keep the eyeballs of humanity on those screens, at the end of the day, their companies make more money. And so they design them. There's millions and millions of dollars that go into you looking at that screen. And here's what they don't want you to know. And here's what they don't want me to know. The phone is designed to hook you more than it is designed to help you. Now, it is designed to help you. It's super helpful. I use my phone all the time. I love, especially when I travel, like I can't get around without the Maps app. But it's actually designed first and foremost to hook you, but then to help you. And so the question is, well, what do we do? There's not really a quick fix here. We're in this enormous cultural phenomenon. We need seismic paradigm shifts in the way that we think and in our habits and the way that we behave. And the answer is not to become Amish, and the answer is not to destroy your phone. But we do need a Christian way to think about the monumental addiction to our devices. So I want to start in Hebrews chapter 12. If you still have your paper Bible, you can open there. If you didn't bring a paper Bible, don't feel guilty. Just use it on your phone. That's fine. Hebrews chapter 12. We'll start there, then go to John 10. The author says, therefore, since we are... Wait, I guess I should stop. I hear pages ruffling. This is so foreign to me. Okay, Hebrews 12, we're starting in verse 1. It's not going to be on the screen. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Pretty powerful verse. Let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles and fix our eyes on Jesus. When my girls were really young, talking like 3 and 5 years old, one day in evening they said, hey, Dad, we want to lead the devotional tonight, because every night we're doing reading something from the Bible, singing songs. We're doing some kind of a devotional every night. And they said, Dad, we want to do the devotion. I was like, okay. So they go back to their room and they prepare for like 45 minutes. I'm like, this is like an elaborate devotional. When they're ready, they call me into the room and they say, all right, Dad, we want you to do something. I'm like, all right. The whole room has obstacles set up all throughout the room. There's chairs, there's toys, there's clothes. It's just a bunch of stuff. And at the other end of the room, there's this, some kind, it was like a cross or a Bible or some goal that I was trying to get to. And they said, all right, Dad, we want you to start here. We want you to get through all the obstacles and get to the goal on the other side. So I was like, okay. So I start climbing over all these things they have set up. When I get halfway through, one of them, I think it was Heidi, she held up a dollar bill and she said, Dad, look. And so I took my eyes off the goal and I looked at the dollar bill. At that moment, both of my girls, like running backs, ran straight at me and tackled me into the closet right behind me, and they shut the doors and left me in the darkness with princess costumes. And I was thinking, what? This is the weirdest devotional ever. So I opened the doors. I'm like, girls, what was that about? Why did you do that? And here's what they said. They said, you took your eyes off Jesus, you put it on the money, and so we had to send you to hell. It's like, whoa. I was like, I don't know about that. Like, I'm not sure if that's the best. Wow, that's harsh. Like, it's really harsh. You fix your eyes on Jesus, and you throw off everything that hinders. So here's what I want to point out from Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1 and 2. The author tells you to throw off two things. The second thing he tells you to throw off is sin. The sin that so easily entangles. But the first thing he tells you to throw off is everything that hinders. Do you know what that means? That means that there are some things that hinder you which are not necessarily sinful. Like, you don't have to sin to stray. So there's generally two things that will impede your spiritual progress. Number one, transgressions. Number two, distractions. Transgressions is just a fancy word for sin. So sin will keep you from God. So your pride and your greed and your lust and your jealousy and your judgmental thoughts when you directly oppose the will of God, that's going to pull you away from God. But it's not just transgressions, it's also distractions. And the crazy thing about distractions is distractions are usually good things. But it's when we take the good things and we make them ultimate things. Sports is a good thing, but when we make it an ultimate thing, it pulls us away from God. Shopping can be a good thing, but when you make shopping a good thing into the ultimate thing, it pulls you away from God. Cable news is a good thing, but when you make cable news the ultimate thing, it pulls you away from God. And your phone's a good thing, but when you make it the ultimate thing, it pulls you away from God. So the author says, let us throw off everything that hinders. In other words, anything that you make the main thing robs you of the real thing. Anything that you make the main thing robs you of the real thing, which is an abiding relationship with Jesus Christ. And that's why the author's pretty cut and dry about it. Throw off everything that hinders and fix your eyes on Jesus. I lost my entire junior year of track because I had my eyes fixed on the wrong thing. I'm coming back from a run. School's getting out. The cars are driving by. There's a girl named Libby. She's 1 year older than me. She's really pretty. She honks, and I pump my arms like this. Kind of my chest swells with pride, and I turn and look at her, and I give her a really big smile. I take my eyes off the sidewalk. I slip on the curb. I sprain my ankle, and I'm out for the year. Next day, I show up in Spanish class, and Libby's like, well, what happened? And I'm like, you're just so pretty. That's what happened to me. If you weren't so pretty, I wouldn't have looked at you. But the thing is, I couldn't keep my eyes on the race when I had my eyes on Libby. And for you, how in the world are you supposed to keep your eyes fixed on Jesus when they're fastened to your screen for 4 hours a day? And how in the world are you supposed to love your neighbor as yourself when every single buzz kills conversation? Fix your eyes on Jesus and throw off everything that hinders. Here's the good news. If you do this, if you take these hard steps of your relationship with your phone, you're not going to regret it. If you really fix your eyes on Jesus, you'll never regret it. And here's why. Because not only does your phone have a hidden agenda, Jesus has a hidden agenda. John chapter 10, verse 10, Jesus says this. The thief comes only to steal and to kill and destroy. But I have come that they may have life and they may have it to the full. I'm going to read that again because I heard the ruffle of pages. I'm not used to this again. So now that you're there, I'm going to read it again. John 10:10. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy, but I have come that they may have life and that they may have it to the full. Like, that's the kind of life Jesus wants you to have. He wants you to have the best life possible. Full. Like, meaningful, purposeful, graceful, beautiful. Like, Jesus wants you to have that life. And so your phone, the hidden agenda of your phone's addiction. Do you know the hidden agenda of Jesus? The hidden agenda, or just the agenda of Jesus, it's abundance. He wants you to have the best possible life possible, or the best possible life. So if I could, like, put my Bible up here, and if I could just tell you, like, what's on the other side of the Bible? Well, it's not millions of dollars and engineers trying to get you addicted. On the other side of Scripture and on the other side of church and on the other side of all these good spiritual things in your life, you know what's there? You've got a loving Father, a compassionate Son, and you've got a life-giving Spirit. And they actually want what is best for you. They want to give you the most meaningful life possible. One of the most vulnerable things that I do as a dad, and a lot of dads and moms, we all do this, is when I watch my kids sleep. Sometimes I'll go into there after they've gone to bed. Sometimes when I'm going to work early and they're still sleeping, I'll go in there and just watch them sleep. And I pray for them. And the kinds of things that I pray for my daughters are, I pray that they'll be full of love and full of joy. I pray that they'll make a difference in the world. I pray that they'll have the courage to do hard things when they have to. I pray that they will know how beautiful that they really are. Now, when they're awake, obviously life is normal and we have chores and disciplines and tantrums and it's just normal, messy life. But at the end of the day, that's how I really feel about my girls. I want them to thrive. And the point is, if that's what I do as a flawed, short-sighted, sinful man, if that's how I feel about my daughters, if that's what I hope for when it comes to my daughters, what do you think that your Heavenly Father wants for you? He's perfect. And so if that's what I want for my girls, your Father truly wants the best from you. And when you fix your eyes on Jesus, what Jesus does is He actually fixes His purposes on you. And so the more you're looking at Jesus and the more you're fixing your eyes on Jesus, the more you're internalizing His value system. But again, you can't fix your eyes on Jesus when they're glued to the glowing rectangles for 4 hours a day. So let's get practical. I want you to pass these out there on the end of all your pews. It's the phone, break up with your phone challenge. So it's a 3-week challenge, and I'd like everybody, if possible, I want you to try the challenge. Some of you could do way more than this, and if you can, I encourage you to do a lot more than this card says. So each week has 5 different exercises, and the weeks get harder and harder. So this first week is just warming up. Next week is ramping up, and then the final week is breaking up. And so I'm going to focus on these first 5. So the first one is download an app to keep track of your daily phone usage. So you might already have this on your phone. This is all about awareness. You got to be aware of where your time's going. So download an app to keep track of your phone usage. 2 and 3 are really important. They both involve lists. Number 2 is write down when and why you mindlessly scroll. Like, what time of day do you just find yourself for no reason just mindlessly scrolling through your phone? And why are you doing that? Are you bored? Are you looking for something you shouldn't? Like, why are you mindlessly scrolling? And then 3 on the list might be the most important exercise of the week. I want you to take time with a pen and paper and write down what you would want to do with freed up time. Like, if you really do this challenge, you're going to have extra time because you're not going to be looking at your phone as much. What do you want to do? You want to take a walk? You want to bring a book? You want to have lunch with a friend? Like, what do you want to do with your freed up time? A lot of you have already done 4, which is bring your Bible to church this month. And then 5 is just try this. Next time, this week, when you're waiting in public, you're at the grocery store, you're in line, you're at the doctor's office, you're sitting there, see what it's like to wait in public without using your phone. Just observe reality, see what happens. So that's your challenges this week. Now, back to Hebrews. I'm going to let the author of Hebrews have... one more thing I'll mention about this. In 3 weeks, this is leading up to a 24-hour fast from your phone. And we're going to have a congregational board game night on Saturday, February 2nd. We're calling it FaceTime. And so we'd like you to sync your 24-hour phone fast with that church event so we can get together. But I'll talk more about that next week. Let's let the author of Hebrews have the final word here. Hebrews 12, verse 2. I read this earlier. I want to read it one more time. Hebrews 12:2, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For the joy set before him, the joy set before Jesus, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Max Lucado has a book called He Chose Nails. That's what this verse is getting at. It was a choice for Jesus. He went to the cross, and he had blood smeared all over his face, and he was murdered. And it was his choice. And why did he do that? Hebrews says, because of the joy set before him. Do you know what that joy was? That joy was you. And that joy was me. Jesus Christ loved you so much. That's why he went through all the pain, so that you wouldn't have to. It's the heart of the gospel. And so if you've never accepted the forgiveness of Jesus Christ, you are his joy. And he did so much for you. And every single week we talk about this, but this could be the day where you start your relationship with Jesus Christ by getting baptized. And if that's something you want to do, you come tell me about that while we sing. And if you need prayers, tell me about that as well. Let's stand. Let's sing.